You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning and welcome to Morning Java, brought to you as always by our friends at the Get-Go Cafe and Market, where Mr. Lolly, I'm told that they still have the captain going.
Yeah, if you're into fish sandwiches, and who isn't, that's a good one to go and get before they're gone.
Yeah, and they come in not just in the big like hoagie-type buns, but they also come in wraps, which is nice for people like me and Dale, who benefit from eating things in wraps. You know, the reason that I would bring the football writer of 30 plus years onto this particular program would be to talk about baseball, because that's logical, right? Well, for anybody who doesn't know, Dale's also very much a baseball lifer in terms of coaching. His son plays, and you actually might be the best qualified person on our staff to speak to this subject. But when you see and hear and read these debates that never seem to end about pitch counts and pitcher usage. Look, Dale, I know you're old school about a lot of stuff, but I know that you're not on this, right?
No, because you have to protect the pitchers. This is not 1960 where, Sandy Koufax went out and threw 300 innings 5 years in a row. And then what happened to Sandy Koufax?
5 years.
Exactly. You know, if you're investing millions of dollars into these pitchers, and it's not something that I would do, even though my son was a pitcher in college. I wouldn't spend as a major league team big money on a pitcher, particularly a starting pitcher, because he's out there once every 5 days. You're going to get one. You're going to get 30 starts out of him over the course of a season. Is that worth giving a pitcher $30 million, $1 million per start? I don't think that's good business myself. But if you're going to make that kind of investment in a pitcher or a first round draft pick, you damn well better protect his arm. You're not going to send him out there in his first start of the season and expect him to go 125 pitches. That's insane. It just is.
It's the medical part of it. And again, I know you can speak to this, is a very real thing. These numbers that get thrown out there about pitch counts, pitch usage, building up the arm, conditioning it through the season, these aren't just made up. And I think that's part of the problem that people have accepting this, is that because they didn't grow up with this data or this medical information or this scientific information, this hard evidence, they don't think it's real. They don't accept it. All they know is that Nolan Ryan once pitched a game with 140 pitches or whatever it is. And then that must mean that everybody can do it or should do it.
When I was coaching, and I still coach, but when I was coaching, specifically pitching coaching, doing as a pitching coach, every pitcher is different. You may have one pitcher who 110 pitches is nothing to him. He goes out there and does it. You may have another pitcher who, when he gets to 80, you can see him getting tired. That's the problem.
Hang on. Why? Why is that?
Some guys use more of their bodies than others. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so it's about the conditioning of the legs more so than anything. That's why you see pitchers, they should be out there working on their leg conditioning.
Lower running, body, yes.
Running and all that stuff. Because what happens is when the legs get tired, now your mechanics start to lag a little bit.
And so
you're compensating with more of your arm. And so the arm drags a little bit, or you try to overthrow with your arm. And that's when you get the injuries. So, so much of it, again, is what's the guy's build like? I know a lot of major league teams look at, how tall is he? It's not so much how tall he is. What's his build like? Is he 5'10", but 210 pounds? Is he 5'10" and 150 pounds? There's a big difference there, I think if you think back, and hey, we know, what Roger Clemens situation was with the PEDs and everything else. But the one thing that always stood out to me about Roger Clemens,
like this,
his legs were so
tree trunks.
And that's what you need. I mean, that's where you're generating your power at as a pitcher. It's not here. It's not here. This stuff is along for the ride, and they're great. Yeah. Nolan Ryan's the same way. You look at Nolan Ryan, and he's put together. And so, you know, I've had pitchers, pitchers on the same staff that were, you know, and one of them was my son. When my son would get to 85 or so pitches, when he, and this is at the pony level, so he was 14. When he would get to 85 pitches, he was pretty much done. You know, you could leave him out there, but he wasn't going to be effective. I had another pitcher on the same staff who 110, 120 pitches, he was still going strong. I mean, but it's apples and oranges. Every pitcher is different.
Yeah, and we haven't even brought up the whole concept of ease of motion. There's a baseball term that you hear all the time when you're out on the ball fields, and it's free and easy. He's throwing free and easy, free and easy. And what that means in layman's terms is that nothing about the motion is especially high stress. You know, it's not that what they call max effort delivery.
Right.
That's how someone like, to me, the example that really jumps out in baseball, recent baseball history of a smaller guy who just pitched way above his stature is Pedro Martinez. I mean, I think of him
and I think of the kid for the Giants.
Tim Wakefield. I mean, that's different because Wakefield.
Tim Lincecum.
And yeah, he was a good guy. He would do the thing where he went all the way. He had all kinds of weirdness.
Billy Wagner was a little guy.
But you know, he's a reliever. Yeah. I mean, he could go max effort. But when you see these guys, and now we're going to be getting into a debate between Jack Leiter and Kumar Rocker on the same thing. And you and I are texting each other during the Vanderbilt game the other night. And you're like, Jack Leiter's it. Because you don't care about his stature because you're watching his stuff. It makes for a fascinating debate, that kind of stuff. But the health of the pitchers does not. That's kind of what I'm getting at here. This idea that you just roll them out there, and somebody from the Minnesota Twins had a no-hitter through six innings at 84 pitches. That dude is not getting a no-hitter. He's not.
I mean, if you want to get a no-hitter early in the season, you better be very, very you can't go deep in counts.
No.
You can't be Chris Archer.
You can't have strikeouts. You're throwing sinkers and getting ground balls.
You want two or three pitch at bats for everybody. And it worked. You can do that. It works. Mm-hmm. You know, it happens. You know, again.
Well, this dude wasn't getting it. That's my point. Right. He was – and I don't know that even if he had a low pitch count like 55 or 60 through six innings, I still – you know?
Yeah. And that's the thing that people don't think about because, okay, before the game, he threw 40 pitches in the bullpen to get warmed up for the game.
Teams then track all of it.
Throwing pitches, you know, in between innings. So once he gets up to that sixth inning, he's already thrown an additional, let's say he throws five warm-up pitches per inning. Well, he's already at 70 pitches plus what he's thrown in the game.
And all of it's tabulated. Even in places like Pirate City out on the Four Field Complex, every single time that arm throws a baseball in anger, it's tracked. And they know that for their own purposes, for when they go to try to trade a player, they have all of that stuff documented so no one has to worry about excessive wear and tear. It's just the way things are done now in baseball. It's the way things are done, but it's done that way to protect the pitcher's health.
Yeah, and you know, I covered a high school baseball game one time when this is before they were using pitch counts, where I watched a pitcher in a playoff game go out there and throw, because I track pitches counts when I'm covering a game like that, took him 70-plus pitches to get through the first inning. They ran him out there again for the second inning, and he threw another 25 pitches before they finally pulled him. Yeah. Under the old high school rules, because he had only thrown two innings, he would have been eligible to come back and pitch the next day.
Somebody would have used him.
And they probably would have used him. He was the ace of that staff, and so they would have used him. You know, so now high schools are at the pitch count level, which I think is a good thing. You know, I'll go back to, again, when I had my son. He threw a complete game in high school at one point where he threw 68 pitches.
Wow.
But then couldn't throw again the rest of the week because – He pitched on a Tuesday. We played again on Friday, and he hadn't had the proper rest for throwing seven innings. I think pitch count is a more proper way to do it as opposed to the innings. But the problem at the high school level is who's tracking the pitches. Because, I mean, you've answered phones before in a sports department as I have.
They don't even know the score.
Again, you're getting, and this is no offense, you're getting some freshman who has no idea how to keep a book, and you ask them how many hits were there? 27? No, there weren't 27 hits in the game in a 3-2 ball game. You know, it's just – so you're that's what you're getting there. So we're working in the right direction, I believe, at the lower levels. But – I think at the and so I think that's what trickles down. You know, the people who are saying that, well, he only threw, you know, six innings, are looking at this backwards, like they used to look at it, through the eyes of how youth baseball used to look at it. Well, you know, these guys should be able to throw nine innings, no problem. It's the pitch count. It's how many pitches has he thrown? You know, again, Chris Archer is a perfect example of that. How many games last year was he at 90 pitches through five innings, if he was lucky? because he couldn't find the strike zone. You know, you posted the other day before the start of the Pirates number one guy, the prospect,
Mitch Keller,
that he needs to trust his stuff. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Trust your stuff. Jeff Karstens chimed in on that. He's a perfect example of that. If you put Jeff Karstens and Mitch Keller together in a bullpen session, you'd look at this and go, there's no way that these guys have the same job. But one of them would attack the hitters and one of them would not. You have to. This is where I think a lot of times the former staff of the Pirates gets a little bit of a bad rap, the pitch to contact thing. Mm-hmm. That's what that means to me. That means pitch in the zone. Don't try to get a lot of chase pitches because they're wasted pitches. Yeah, maybe you'll get some chase strikeouts, but if you attack the zone and make the hitter hit your pitch as opposed to, you know, laying a meatball down the middle of the plate because it's now a 3-2 count, you're going to be far more effective.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Ramon Foster joins me from Hendersonville, Tennessee. And Moan, the next time we see the NFL, we will see a 17-game regular season. And yeah. This, I'm not going to say anything about it in advance because I'm infinitely more interested in what you have to say. Mm-hmm. But this is going to change football, and it's going to change maybe the awareness of CTE and concussion protocol, or is it just another game?
It's a little bit of all of it, honestly. Before the 17 game discussion came up, it was part of the CBA discussion also. There was an option. The option always was 17, never 18. The idea was, okay, you get one more, you take one away in the preseason. The idea of it was, if you get one more, you also get more money up front. This is the thing that went down with, you know, the 17-game discussion in the CBA.
Yes.
I was I was a team rep with the Steelers. And my involvement with me being a rep to my guys was always this. They're going to be well-informed. They're going to understand what the business side of these decisions are. I tell them about the money. I tell them about the risk. I tell them about the ups and downs of everything they got going on. At this time, you know, this discussion, I had already, you know, retired, you know, when the heat of this. But my duties were still as a rep. Me, Cam, and Marquise. And Vinny was in on some of those calls. And just Vince Williams was in on some of those calls and just everything. And this is the thing that I told them, look, I'm going to cast a vote, but it's not my vote. I give all you guys this information so you can decide on what you're going to do. Because, look, I'm not going to play under this deal. You guys are going to play under this deal. You guys are going to have the responsibility of fulfilling a 17th game if they present it to you. Okay? So we go into everything they want to go into, the health side of it. You know, just trying to make sure guys have stuff for post-football. They have stuff during the season. They have all their checks and balances of workers' comp and just line of duty benefits and everything else. I gave them all this information. Anybody ever tell – if anybody say Ramon didn't inform us, they weren't listening, okay? If anybody say Cam didn't inform them, Cam Hayward, they weren't listening. Same goes for Vinny. Same goes for Marquise also. Marquise is on the other side of it. Honestly, he kind of wanted to vote no. But when you present everything in front of everybody and say, hey, look, the opportunity to make more money in this game is what you want. The best way to get this opportunity is probably going to be able to add a 17th game. Not going to like it. There's going to be adjustments to the offseason. There's going to be adjustments to, I guess, just continued study of getting the technology of the equipment we use better. There's spotters up top that, you know, spot guys for concussions.
Yeah.
Pull people out of games. Now, you got an opportunity of raising the minimum up. Also got an opportunity of raising the cap up with the money that can come in from the TV deals because of one more game. You got to ask yourself, are you willing to do it? And the guys that voted in Pittsburgh voted yes for this. I saw somebody today said the split on guys want to do it was like 49.5% no. And I got to check in with the PA on this, but I think that yes was actually a lot higher.
Okay.
So with that being said, the guys were in favor of this new CBA with the idea that a 17th game wouldn't come in until 2021-2022. We are in 2021-2022 when it comes down to the idea of a 17th game. Now, of course, with this deal, this money, the 17th game that can be potentially played out, there's always going to be backlash.
Oh, and there's, you know, it's been there.
For you sure. Know what I'm saying? So. Yeah.
And most of it at the union, because I think that the picture that's been painted since this happened was that the NFL owners had a master scheme here, where they were going to go get their 17th game, they were going to get their 10 years of labor peace, and then go to the networks.
Yeah.
And you know, get their payday. But the problem with that, keeping it that simple, Ramon, is what you just said, which is the expanded TV revenue still goes to the players because it's yeah. And this, everyone talks about this TV money as if it goes 100% to the owners. No. It's expanded cap.
It's easy to say it goes to the owners because it's only 32 of them. And then you say, well, this guy's only making this. Let me explain something to you for the people that understand, like, why football players get paid what they get paid. Basketball has 12 to 15 guys on there. It's easy to give them guaranteed money and more up top. If you look at their rosters, there's a bunch of minimum guys on those rosters too, okay? Mm-hmm. Hockey deals don't touch football deals at all.
They don't touch any sports deals. Yeah,
baseball, we only see the big time guys. There's a bunch of 100,000 errors when it comes down to those players.
In the yes, there are.
In the MLB, too. And then the levels to get to the pros is, I ain't going to say way harder, but it's just as hard as making it to the next level in the NFL, too. Football is the most contact sport you have in America when it comes down to it. The risk of injury is super high, 100% injury rate when it comes down to it. Also, and then it's the fact that an injury can end a guy more in football than it will in any other sport. So, and it's also 53 guys. So you go from, what was it, $495,000 to $600,000 minimum. I think the minimum this year might be $620,000, somewhere up in there. The idea of this deal was, look, we get more money and you spread it out more to the players. Guys, when I came into the league, my rookie year, my minimum was $405,000, okay? Technically, just the finances of it, if we got time, that $405,000 basically split in half. That's what, let's say after everything's said and done, depending on who was president, $405,000 goes to $230,000-ish, possibly. Okay, after
You mean taxes, yeah.
Yeah, after taxes.
Okay.
About $230,000. Then you got, of course, get a car because most of the time you don't have one. You got to pay rent because you don't have that. Then you got day-to-day living, okay? If a guy only played one year in this league, he could potentially leave this league with what he sacrificed, honestly, with not a whole lot.
No.
At a floor of at least 6'10", 6'20", 6'30", a guy can be a one and done and still have a nice lifestyle if he saves right and go into the workforce, okay? That's the idea of this deal.
Yeah,
and
that's also the thing that I respect. I'm sorry, Mo. I just want to throw this in. The thing that I respect about the NFL's labor deal is that, unlike you mentioned baseball, where they have just this massive gap between the $30-40 million guys, and then the minimum in baseball is right around five still.
Yeah.
And meaning 500,000. And again, this stuff sounds good, except that your career, and this is doubly true in the NFL, the NFL players have the shortest careers in North American professional sports, is on average 2 years. And that's just the amount of time that it takes you to just kind of bounce from one practice squad to the other. That's most of the guys.
That's what we call core guys. That's what we were trying to take care of.
Yeah.
There's no middle class. I just talked to a baseball buddy of mine. You correct me if I'm wrong, but he said he was 1 year away from being vested. When is a baseball player vested? Like 7 years or something?
Vested, I thought was 10.
It was 10.
Yeah. Baseball's different. Yeah.
Baseball's different. Hoping you correct me. It's 10 years to be vested. He's at 9 years. Football is 3-3. 3 years, three games.
But that's okay. That's why.
Yeah, that is why. But, like, imagine playing 7 years and you're not vested yet. You know?
Yeah.
That is tough. And then this is the other side that they're not talking about when it comes to this deal. I know the safety is a huge part of it. That's why the offseason will be a little bit different. That's why, like I said, the technology of the game switches up a little bit also. And hopefully they'll expand the roster by two or three guys, which is needed also. But – the better the league does with this money, the better the players do also.
Well, that's what I was saying about the cap system, is that it doesn't leave the players high and dry here. No. The owners don't just get to keep all the TV revenues because it came after the CBA. The TV revenues are accounted for.
And I was going to say, that's also internet, that's also streaming, that's also the gambling side of it.
Which is where most of this, not most, but that's where a lot of this money is coming from in the NFL deal.
Let me say this, because this was one of the most heated moments of, like, this negotiations. It's like, all right, guys, we can say all we want to about this deal. It comes down to, what are you willing to do? Are you willing to say, no, we're going to do less and potentially not grow more? Or you going to take this money? And it rolled down into, if I can leave this league shorter time, possibly better financially, and set myself up, that's what it came down to. And it also came into, well, it's mostly a young guy's league. By the time you get year seven, you're very established. And most coaches, if you have the right one, take care of you, like Coach Thompson.
Yeah.
So it was, again, as you said, to protect those core guys, not the one percenters, not your quarterbacks, at DNs, left tackles, starting left tackles and stuff. It was the guys that was the middle of the road guys that, like, they give the same sacrifice, but they're not compensated the same way.
Well, here's the last thing I got for you, because you brought up health. What more can and or should not we know the steps that have already been taken. You mentioned concussion spotters. I mean, there's obviously a greater awareness.
There'll be hospital relationships in all 32 cities for teams, for guys.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, there's that set up also.
Yeah.
There's mandatory workers' comp that's going to be set up also. So, I mean, go ahead. My bad.
That's actually what I'm trying to – I'm talking about more from the football standpoint here. Can you go lighter on practices? I mean, all coaches, including your own, hate that because they'll counter that, well, if we practice less, we're not going to be as prepared for the opponent, and maybe you're heightening the risk of injury. You know, I mean, you know, there's different ways of looking at that, and I can respect both sides of that. But is there, you know, do you think that there will be any easing up in any form or an understanding? Now it's 17 games, and specifically in Pittsburgh, we're talking about 2 or 3 years now where the team didn't finish necessarily the way it started. You know, I think this is going to be a real dialogue around here.
Smart coaches will adjust. I think COVID showed us something last year by having no OTAs, no minicamp, no offseason. I think you and I would both agree the product of the game was still there at a high level. It was still good quality football. Fans or no fans, the guys competed. I think the biggest adjustment will come to guys' free time from February till May instead of February to April. You know, it'll be mini camp, or it'll probably just be mini camp, you know. And I know a bunch of the guys were advocates of that, were advocates of, look, I don't want to be in City X because I just don't want to be there. And my biggest argument to them was, what about the young guys that need that, you know, that playbook time and stuff like that? I think years 1, 2, and 3, there might be an option to be in town, an option to be in town. I think they have done a good job, at least we have in Pittsburgh, of shortening practice time, giving guys breaks. But, DK, as much as we say this, you know and I know and everybody that watches football, they don't want to see you pulling flags. They want to see you hitting. They want to see you smashing faces. Yeah. So as much as these hypocrites talk about safety, 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 guess what's going to be on Station X top 10 plays?
Jacked up.
Exactly. Well, guess what's going to be on Network B top 10 plays of the night?
Jacked up.
What's going to be on your local radio station and podcast on the following Monday of the game?
Monster truck voice this time. Jacked up! Up, 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 up.
Okay. The game is the game, and I hate it. I come to terms with myself about, hey, that's a part of it. I cringe when I let my son go out now for middle school football. But guess what? It's the game, DK. It's part of it. You don't want to see me patty caking with somebody with a shells on instead of shoulder pads. You want to see me arms strapped up.
Oh, yeah.
And smacking somebody in the mouth. As much as they cried about Juju hitting perfect.
No one looked away. No one looked away. No. In fact, that still gets cited as like the ultimate example of Juju as Pittsburgher, you know? Is when he
exactly. I ain't telling them to miss me with it, DK. But guess what they're going to do on Sunday, Monday, Thursday, and sometime Saturday? Flicking the remote and watching somebody getting their head smashed.
Yeah. There'll be one more week of that than there has been in the past.
It sucks, but that's the game.
Joined now by Tom Reed in Columbus, Ohio. And Tom, we've seen the world, much less the sports world, clamp down hopefully one final time to fend off coronavirus, including the Brazilian variant and other mutations. And we're seeing it hit the sports world, notably the Vancouver Canucks, but not just them. The Washington Nationals have been hit. Why aren't these athletes getting vaccinated?
Well, are we, you know, I think in mass, I would think at some point, because we've gotten so far along in the process in a lot of these states, in Ohio, they're into the age 40s and 30s. You would think at this point it would be okay for I think a lot of people would be fine with teams going ahead and vaccinating their athletes. It's not like they're jumping line to get in front of 70 and 80 year old people who are considered the most vulnerable. I would absolutely think that at this point, these teams should be getting vaccinated, and you would hope that all the players and coaches would take advantage of that right now.
Well, but they don't touch the issue. I've brought it up with the Penguins and the Pirates, our two teams that are active right now, and they act as if you're asking them like some strange thing. They just back off. And not only that, but they start talking about personal choice and stuff like that. Look, I understand that they're not in a position to where they can just go around jabbing needles into their players' shoulders, you know, while they aren't looking. But at the same time, let's be real here. There are going to be conditions to travel. There are going to be conditions to employment in the United States. And there's no way vaccines aren't going to be part of that. So at the very least, it seems to me that the National Hockey League and Major League Baseball should both be dealing with their players' associations on a vaccination. And if that's happening right now, I'm unaware of it.
DK, I completely agree with you, but you also know what the climate of this country is in regards to some of this. And there are some people out there that are just, for whatever reason, whether it's religious, different groups, just don't believe in vaccines. And this was even before we were talking about the this virus, the coronavirus. So this has been an issue that's been ongoing for years, and it's really just come to a head because we are in a pandemic. Again, I agree wholeheartedly with you, but I think that's where some of these athletes and some of these people have reservations about it. And I really don't know what the answer is.
I haven't even heard that, Tom. All I've heard is that there's no plan. That's kind of what I'm getting at here. Like I don't know. Has there been an athlete somewhere that said I'm not taking it? Like in the NHL or Major League Baseball?
No, but I do wonder if those conversations have already happened behind closed doors, right? They're not coming out and saying, and I'm just using this as an example, but Alexei Lafreniere is an anti-vaxxer and will take it under no circumstances. Maybe the New York Rangers know that and they're not going to force it on him because they don't. Again, you're opening up an entire nether level of, protests and that kind of stuff. And I think teams and leagues are aware of that possibility. That's my only thought, my only guess on that.
Yeah,
I think these teams and these leagues should have this first and foremost for the safety of the players, safety of the athletes themselves, and then of course just to make sure that there's no breakup in competition is what we're seeing with Vancouver right now.
Yeah, I think that's where this starts crossing the line into. It's a community responsibility. Okay. I'm sorry, but if you're not vaccinated against a pandemic, you're not going to play in these four leagues. I mean, I don't see another way around that. You are permitted. At least I don't know about Canada law, but I do know in the United States, you are permitted as an employer to mandate vaccinations. You just can't do your job. You can't do your job. Yeah. So between that and getting organized, and then comes the optics, which you referenced earlier. Yeah, it's not going to look great if professional athletes are going out and whatever. And it's not like testing where Major League Baseball and some other leagues were, as you know, because you've written about this extensively, were creating basically their own labs or repurposing their existing labs. That's not the case with a vaccine. They're not making their own vaccine. They would be kind of jumping the line or whatever, but are they really? Because if you have your high-risk people out of the way, what are we talking about here? 2,000 of these things max, right?
Yeah. No, I you're preaching to the choir. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Again, I just have a feeling that behind the scenes they are concerned from a PR standpoint of what happens if a high profile athlete says, you cannot make me take this vaccine. I have always felt this way about vaccines. And again, I'm just hypothetically that there may be athletes out there whose wives are concerned about vaccines and stuff like that. That's where it gets really tricky. And this is all of our country, not just the sports world. I know we're talking about the sports world, but you don't have to scroll too far down your page, news pages these days to see those type of stories out there. And I just think the sports world is caught in it just like everybody else.